I'd like to reconvene the December meeting of the Marine Resources Commission. Next item on the agenda is the continuation of public comments. This is an opportunity for those in the audience to be heard on matters that are not on the agenda. Is anyone that wishes to be heard on matters that are not on the agenda? Yes, sir. Could you come forward, please? State your name.
Hello, my name is John Forrest. I'm a commercial fisherman from Gwen's Island, Virginia.
Forrest.
I've been coming here since the early 70s when the building was over near the waterfront.
Before my time, probably before my birth, not really, but anyway.
After I got a driver's license.
Yes, sir.
And I never knew that the public comments thing on this thing was for making comments on things that are not on the agenda. I always thought I could only comment on things that were on the agenda.
Yes, sir. However, if it's something regulatory in nature that's going to take a lot of study, I would give you a caveat up front. Don't expect anything to occur. We do not, by course of action, normally undertake, unless it's an emergency pursuant to the code, regulatory action pursuant to public comment. But you can continue.
Right. I understand that. But I have five items that I'd like you all to consider anyway. The first one is, I have friends, and they keep encouraging me not to give up on trying to get a dogfish permit. So my first one is, I propose a change in the wording of the current dogfish regulation, that instead of 10,000 pounds in a calendar year, it's 10,000 pounds in a 12-month period.
And the reason for that?
Well, that would let me qualify for a dogfish
permit. Oh, okay. Makes sense.
Okay. I had 7,000 pounds in December of 2007 and 5,000 pounds in November of 2008.
Okay.
The only reason I didn't catch enough in 2008 was because my father fell, broke his hip, and I had to quit fishing.
Yes, sir.
Okay. The next issue is, I'm currently oyster shaft oyster tonguing in Milford Haven.
Okay.
There, I counted this morning, including me, there were 11 boats working that bar. The bar is about as big as this room, I think, because the boats were bouncing off each other. Anyway, that oyster bar is going to be depleted in, they estimate, a week, maybe, at the most. After that, we have nothing to do. So I talked to those guys, and they agree. They see no reason why we can't open part of the Piankatank River east of Iron Point. And they suggested, I was going to say a 5-bushel limit with a 10-bushel boat limit, but they say 5 bushels to the boat, period. That's it.
Who's they that you're talking about?
Curtis Forrest and his mate and a couple of other guys.
All right.
We're going to have absolutely nothing to do in January and February because there won't be any oysters in Milford Haven to catch. The whole place is mudded over. I know Mr. Wesson doesn't want to do that, but the by definition, market oysters are not seed oysters. And there's I doubt, if you had a 5-bushel limit per boat, that's it, per day, I can't see how that could possibly cause any harm in the lower Piankatank River. In addition, there's an oyster bar that used to be there that now I understand is gone, but it's called Three Branches. It's on the western side of Gwen's Island. It used to be a mile and a half long, and it went from the 18-foot mud line to about 10 feet. And that was the first oyster bar everybody worked, because that was one of the best ones. It's completely sanded over now. And the reason it's sanded over is because nobody works it anymore. When you tong them, you're constantly bringing the shells back to the surface. That particular bar needs to be open. Mr. Wesson said they were going to plant shells on it, but if people don't work it, there's no point. They're just going to sand over like the rest of them. The other issue, next issue, I got five total.
Yes, sir.
Is rockfish. I leased my rockfish tags this year. First time I've ever done that in as long as I've had them. And the problem with that is I went to check to see if the guy had gone over the quota, because I have absolutely no control over what that person does with those, you know, that
that's correct.
Tags after. But the penalty comes back on me if he goes over the quota. And the problem is, I have an opportunity to get quota from somebody else to cover any overage that that guy does, but it doesn't work if I can't find out if he went over the quota. So I'd like there to be some way for the person who, not the person who gets the tags, but the person who leases them, that he can find out if the guy is in violation, because you won't find out if you're in violation until after the end of the year when you get a letter from the VMRC. And he could go over enough because these are ocean tags. You can catch bigger fish. You can go over far enough to get revoked, revoke the whole permit. There should
What's wrong with you asking the person that you're leasing them to if you're over the limit?
What if he lies?
Well, you know, what's one of those, I think, I don't mean it in the wrong way, that's one of the risks that you undertake when you sublease those tags. You know, it's kind of like lending your car to somebody and they go and, you know, rob a bank with the car or whatever, and the car gets seized as fruits of the crime. There's a fine line as to how far government has to go or should go from an intrusion perspective in doing the job that may be incumbent upon the individual. And I don't mean that in the wrong way. I understand where you're coming from, but, you know, there is some obligation, I think, on the person that's subleasing these tags to make sure they're subleasing them to a credible individual that's not going to do them harm. But that's just my personal opinion. So continue, please.
Well, I understand that. But
yes, sir.
It's like I said, it's the first time I've done this, so I don't know if the person is credible or not. I've lived long enough to have lots of people tell me things that turned out to be untrue, that cost me big money.
Do police work for a few years. Yeah. You get the same thing.
Well,
I got you, Mr. Forrest. Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. Next item is, I want to propose, because I don't know if I can do this now or not. I do not have a hook and line license. I had one the year before the qualification, and I had one the year that you had to have it for qualification, but it was after the time limit, the deadline, and I didn't know about it. But anyway, I don't qualify for a hook and line license. But I want to catch oyster toads by scuba gear in the summertime. The reason
that's a novel idea.
Well,
it is.
Here's the reason. I catch hundreds of them in peeler pots. They're all too small to sell. I sold $20 worth this year that the guy would buy. I had to throw the rest of them away. They want big ones, you know, like 4 and 5 pound ones.
Yeah.
And you can't even catch them in a crab pot. And I've deliberately made my crab pot funnels small because as soon as an oyster toad gets in a crab pot, you're not going to catch any more crabs.
Is there any prohibition of actually catching those? I don't think there is it? If it's not prohibited explicitly, is it permissive?
As long as it's not an endangered species.
Well, these aren't. They ought to be, but they aren't.
Well, the gear would be, I dove on the oyster bars back in the early 80s, and the oyster toads are like territorial. They're there all the time.
Right.
And the Pyeongtaek River is full of the things. And oyster toads are called oyster toads because they eat oysters.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever been bit by one, they bite a lot harder. So anyway, the way you catch them is either with your hand.
Noodling.
Well, you can see them. You don't have to stick your hand up under some bar.
Okay.
Hope it's not an alligator. Or you could take like a stick, 6 or 8 inch stick, and let him bite it. But the problem is getting them to let go of it once they bite it. The other thing is,
you break it off in their mouth. They're pretty tough.
You could use a short dip net like I use in my crab tanks, about, you know, this long.
Right.
You can scoop them up and put them in a bag or something. But, I mean, they eat crabs and they eat oysters, and it seems to me like that should be okay.
So too simple to be easy? Jack, on the oyster toad issue?
He's got a pain.
The hand hurts.
What's the prohibition? There's no gear license.
For an oyster toad? Right. We don't want to start licensing hands, do we?
No, sir. I want to
know what the fee is going to be.
There is a hand license for oysters.
Yeah, hand tong, but it actually a hand license.
Hand
license. Yeah.
Hand
license on the eastern shore. Horseshoe crab. Hand horseshoe. Let's send them to the committee.
This is new, and I'm like, okay.
Don't I issue those?
I wouldn't want to do it till the summertime.
Send me a letter.
So you're not looking to use a harpoon or a...
No, because they have to be... To sell them, they have to be alive.
Intact, yeah.
I don't know who eats an oyster toad, really. But they pay $2.25 a pound for it.
If you send me a letter asking for an experimental permit and under what conditions, and we're going to require you under experimental permit to report as to how things are going, what things are going... That way we can evaluate the fishery. You send that, and I can guarantee I'll give you some action on that one. I can assure you that one today. The other issues that you brought up, Mr. Go ahead, sir. Yes, sir. I thought that was fine.
Okay, that's one more issue. This week.
All right.
The guys that are harvesting out there in Milford Haven want to know how come they can't put the oysters in a bushel basket and then put a tag on the basket instead of having to dump them in the floor. I know that, you know, that's their issue. I don't really care.
Well, that goes to the... I'm sorry? Yeah.
You don't care?
I don't care.
That's, well, but I don't carry it. No, I'm just kidding. I carry the answer. The Code of Virginia requires that they be dumped into the bottom. So what happens is, in that situation, from a coal perspective, you can selectively do certain things with the oysters as far as before we get a chance to coal grade or whatever. So they have to be dumped loose in the bottom. So when the Marine police officer comes, he can take a level tub full as required by the code, coal that level tub full, and then determine if the because otherwise the officer, if he so desired, could pick and choose exactly what he wanted to coal. And if you pre-coaled them for him, a lot easier to, because of course the undersized are based on a percentage of the catch, and that automatically discriminates against what the an actual percentage of the catch would be. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was just going to say I had the problem yesterday. I thought I had 9 bushels, and when I got to the dock, I had 10, even exactly to the oyster 10. So if I'd worked another half an hour, I would have been in violation.
But you weren't.
But it was my luck. Well, it was actually by this blister that I got right here.
Mr. Travelstead or Mr. Rowe, y'all want? These are issues that are Mr. Forster, normally are of such significance that the commission, I'm not going to speak for them, but they deserve more study than us to make an off-the-cuff decision. So what I would do is ask that these issues be forwarded to fishery management, let them evaluate them, and then come back. Mr. O'Reilly, you have comment?
A little information from
please.
Forrest, in that, on the dogfish issue. We've worked that out through committee for several committee meetings. There is scheduled to be another committee, so that situation about 12 months rather than a calendar year can come up. I think the committee was left anxious to refine that whole fishery still. So that will come up. The commissioner gave you good advice about the rockfish issue. You already said, I think, what Dr. Wesson would tell you about the Pianca tank, and so I think that's probably most of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Good to see you. Have a happy holiday, Ms. Forrest. Always a pleasure. Thank Anyone you. Else in the public wish to be heard at public comments?